Tonight, James drinks all the pints, Mike cusses out a meteorite, and we argue about everything.
RawPuck.com.
And this is Couch Potato Mike, with no accent.
Yay, no cheese wheel Mike this week.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm annoyed that I fixed the mic, and then the mic didn't work, and now the mic is broken again.
For the record, he's not talking about me, he's talking about the microphone that we had got for the sole purpose of making a podcast with, used for a while, thought we were using for even longer. Started using again, and now it's just, we're thinking about having a Viking burial for it later.
I'm going to dismantle it and form crazy surgery on it.
Yeah, he's going to do some wicked wild shit. He's going to catch his house on fire.
Yeah. But if you have a microphone for the show you want to send us to use to make the sound better, then by all means, please send a microphone.
And we will give you some kind of a free membership to the Survival Punk Army.
Yes, you can have that. A membership for life. I'll give you an auto-renewing membership for life.
Yes, if you give us a very good, high-quality, or good quality, at least, working microphone. Ugh.
What about your week?
My week's been frustrating.
Yeah.
So my week's we've got this bonus program at work, first off, that is kind of counterintuitive. See, you're supposed to try to put people on automatic ordering.
Yeah.
You get paid $1 for each one of those. Problem is, when you do that, eventually, so many people are on automatic ordering that you can't get people calling in to do normal orders, therefore I don't make my quota of 400 call-in orders a week. It's a double-edged sword. They basically built the bonus program where once you do it, and you do good enough at it, eventually you'll no longer be able to get a bonus. You screw yourself out of your own bonus.
Or you expand business.
Yeah, that ain't happening. I mean, it's, I don't know. Our marketing people, our sales reps, they're just not doing their damn jobs anymore is the way I feel. But aside from that, I just received word, and I'm dead serious on this. I'm hoping dead is just a figure of speech, but my father, he just had a heart attack within the last 24 hours, and he's currently in a coronary care unit in a hospital in Cebu, Philippines. So, you folks out there, I need your thoughts and prayers. His name's Robert. Everybody calls him Bob. Well wishes and everything. Like I said, if you send some prayers his ways. Only dad I got, and I really don't want to lose him. But enough of the somber bullshit. Let's get into the show. How about that?
Yeah. What do we got coming up today?
Well, coming up on the show today, we're going to be talking about China and how they are debt canceling. What's going to happen if the internet goes down? We're going to be talking about bugging out versus bugging in, and we're going to be reviewing a dog bed. More on that later. But before we get into all that, let's tell you a few good things about a few good people from a few good sponsors we have, starting with the delicious Mai Tai Exotic Asian Coffee.
Yes, the best coffee that I've ever had, with multiple flavors, and was it last weekend that I roasted the green coffee beans?
It was last weekend.
Yes, and I was warned by the Mai Tai people. They're like, if you roast the coffee indoors, it's gonna stink.
They were not lying.
They were not lying.
You were running people out of this house, dude.
Yes. It stinks really bad until it smells really good. So, yeah. It'll smoke a lot.
I would imagine so. They're green, for God's sake.
Yeah, it smokes. I put them in a cast iron skillet on my stovetop. And no oil or nothing like that. Obviously, you just dry roast them. And then to your particular shade. Mine were a dark, dark brown to black color.
Yeah, they were.
And then I don't have a coffee grinder, so I'll throw them in my Ninja food processor and beat them up. And it worked. It made a light, it made a really good cup of coffee.
Yeah,
not as dark as I prefer, but it was good. I made a second cup with the rest of the beans. I actually soaked them overnight and then brewed it with the soaked coffee beans. So good.
Huh. How about that?
And then I used my mortar and pestle to break up some to get them a little bit finer grind.
Oh, like an apothecarist.
Yes. Only my mortar and pestle's wooden and small and not pewter and... Marble. Yes. Anyway.
But anyway, you
best tasting coffee, MaiTaiCoffee.com. Please do, if you buy from them, let them know that you heard about them from Straw Punk Podcast. And click the link in the right hand margin of the SurvivalPunk.com website.
Yeah, what he said.
Yeah.
Alrighty, and.
No.
Okay.
So let's jump into our newest story.
Alright, China is debt canceling, and yes, that is as scary as it fucking sounds.
Yes.
A little bit of backstory. America's, I'm sure if you live in America, you've heard about the national deficit. Well, we still keep spending money that we don't have, which means we're writing checks and somebody's cashing those checks. China's been cashing those checks. But let's hear a little bit more about it.
Yes, if it will. Okay, this comes from, to be honest, a website I never heard called truthuncensored.net. It's official! China confirms it has begun liquidating treasury, warns Washington. This comes on August 27, 2015, when you'll be hearing this in September, I'm sure. By selling treasuries to defend the renminbi, their currency, the renminbi. China renminbi. Dollar. By selling treasuries to defend the China dollar, they're preventing treasury yields from going lower, despite the fact that they've seen a sharp drop in the stock market. David Wu, head of Global Rates and Currencies Research, Bank of America Corp., said on Bloomberg Television on Wednesday, China has a direct impact on global markets through the U.S. rates. Let's see. Zero Hedge reports. On Tuesday evening, we asked what would happen if emerging markets joined China dumping U.S. treasuries. For months, we've documented the PBOC's liquidation of its vast stocks of U.S. paper. Back in July, for instance, we noted China had dumped a record $143 billion in U.S. treasuries in 3 months via Belgium, leaving Goldman speechless for once. We followed all of this up this week by noting that thanks to the new FX regime, which in theory anyway should have required less intervention, China has likely sold somewhere in the order of $100 billion in U.S. treasuries in the past 2 weeks alone. $100 billion in 2 weeks. Motherfucker. In open FX ops to study the yuan. So what is the freaking renminbi? Well, anyway, put simply, as part of China's devaluation of subsequent attempts to contain said devaluation, China has been purging an epic amount of treasuries.
But even as the cat was out of the bag for the Zero Hedge readers, and even as, to mix colorful escape metaphors, the genie has been let out of the bottle since mid-August for China, which, thanks to the steadfast refusal to just float the yuan and be done with it, will have been continue selling USTs by the hundreds of billions. The world at large was slow to wake up to the China FX interventions actually implied until Wednesday when two things happened. One, Bloomberg, citing fixed income desks in New York, noted substantial selling pressure in long-term USTs emanating from somebody in the Far East. And two, Bill Gross asked in a tweet if China was selling treasuries.
Wow.
Sure enough, on Thursday we got confirmation of what we've been detailing exhaustively for months. Here's Bloomberg. China has cut its holdings in U.S. treasuries this month to raise dollars needed to support the yuan in the wake of the shock devaluation 2 weeks ago.
According to people familiar with the matter, China for such transactions includes China selling directly as well as through agents in Belgium and Switzerland, said one of the people who declined to be identified, as the information isn't public. China has communicated with U.S. authorities about the sales, said another person, that they didn't reveal the size of the disposals. The latest available Treasury data are estimates by strategists suggesting that China controls $1.48 trillion in U.S. government debt, according to the data compiled by Bloomberg. That includes about $200 billion held through Belgium, which Nomura Holdings Incorporated says is the home of Chinese custodial accounts.
The PBOC has sold at least $106 billion in reserve assets in the last 2 weeks, including treasuries, according to an estimate from Societe Generale S.A. Societe Generale? The figure was based on the bank's calculation of how much liquidity will be added to China's financial system through Tuesday's reduction in interest rates. I've never seen that as one word before.
No.
Interest rates, not interest dates.
Yeah, that there should have been a space there.
You're a bad writer. And lenders' reserve requirement ratios. The assumption is that the central bank aims to replenish the funds it drained when it brought yuan to stabilize the currency. Now that what has been glaringly obvious for the last 6 months has been given the official mainstream stamp of fact approval. The all-clear has been given for rampant speculation on what exactly this means for U.S. monetary policy. Here's Bloomberg again. China selling treasuries is not a surprise, but possibly something which people haven't fully priced in, said Owen Callan, a Dublin-based fixed income strategist at Cantor Fitzgerald LP. It would change the outlook on treasuries quite a bit if you started to price in a fairly large liquidation in their reserves over the next 6 months, or as they manage the yuan to whatever level they have in mind. By selling treasuries to defend the renminbi, they are preventing treasury yields from going lower despite the fact that we've seen a sharp drop in the stock market. David Hu, head of Global Rates and Currencies Research at Bank of America Corp. Your title's too long, dude. Said on Bloomberg Television on Wednesday, China has a direct impact on global markets through U.S. rates. You can read now.
As we discussed on Wednesday evening, we do, thanks to the review of extant academic literature undertaken by Citi, have an idea of what foreign FX reserve liquidations mean through the USTs. Suppose EM and developing countries, which hold $5,491 BN in reserves, reduce holdings to 10% over 1 year. This amounts to 3.07% of the U.S. gross domestic product and means 10 years Treasury yields rates rise by a mammoth 108 BP, Citi said, in a note dated...
Basis points.
Oh, okay, if you say so, earlier this week. In other words, for every $500 billion in liquidated Chinese FX reserves, there's an attendant 108 BPS worth of upward pressure on the 10Y. Bear in mind... Bear? That's bear like the bear.
Yeah.
Like Yogi. Bear in mind...
Arr!
Okay, grizzly in mind here that thanks to the threat of looming Fed rates, hike and litany of other factors, including plunging commodity prices and idiosyncratic political risks, EM currencies are in free fall, which means that it's not just China that's in possession of liquidating USD assets. The clear takeaway is that there's a substantial amount of upward pressure building for UST yields, and there is decisively understandable situation for the Fed to find itself going into September. On Wednesday, we summed up the situation as follows. One of the catalysts for the EM outflows is the looming Fed hike, which, when taken together with the above, means that the FOMC raises rates. that will almost certainly accelerate pressure on the EM, triggering further FX reserves drawdowns, i.e. UST dumping, resulting in substantial upward pressure on yields and prompting an immediate policy reversal and perhaps even QE4.
Yeah.
I don't know what the fuck you just said, little kid, but you're special, man. Yeah. You reach down, you touch your brother heart. I honestly have no idea what the hell I was just reading.
Quantitative easing. Yeah, it got a little... Oh, we got one paragraph left, so I'm going to finish this sucker off.
Fucking read that paragraph.
Well, now that China's USD liquidation frenzy has reached a pace where it can no longer be swept under the rug and or played down as inconsequential, and now that... God, the longest run on... You're a terrible writer. I'm going to look at this guy's name so I can call him a terrible writer. Where it could no longer be played down and or down as inconsequential. And now that Bill Dudley has officially opened the door for additional quantitative easing, it would appear that the only way to prevent China and EMUST liquidation from, as Citi puts it, choking off the U.S. market, housing markets, and exerting a kind of forced tightening of the USD channel and forced FOMC to usher in QA4.
E-I-E-I-O.
That paragraph was a run-on sentence. The whole paragraph.
Let me look at that. Hold on. No, there's a period there. No, that's a comma.
That's a comma. God damn, dude.
Fucking throw some periods in every now and then. Shit,
I have to breathe, Mr. Rene Powers.
Horrible fucking grammar, dude. Horrible fucking grammar. Yes, the shit about China and the money and all that shit's horrible, but not as horrible as your writing, sir.
Ma'am. Madam.
Whatever
Madam,
the fuck.
Madam Powers. Madam.
I don't give a fuck.
Madam male, woman. Miss Righty Batty.
Female. Dude. Whatever the hell you are.
God, speaking. Hold up. I realized in reading one of my old recipes on the Sorrel Punk blog that I did have a bad problem of like. For some reason, every time I tried to spell oven, I would hit the R instead. So, like, there's hundreds of typos where I say take it out of the oven and it's over. Take it out of the over.
Take it out of the over.
Take it out of the over, and I'm like, gosh, shut up. I'm going to hire, like, an Indian servant to go through there and replace all the ovens with all the overs with ovens.
Well,
don't
ask me what I thought about that article, because I honestly did not understand anything I fucking just read. You call me a dumbass on the internet all you want. I don't really give a fuck. I'm not a political genius or a scientist. There's too many fucking initials in there.
So, basically, the way that money in the United States is made... I mean, we're not even going to go down that high. We're just going to talk about... So, the basic principle of how the Federal Reserve is allowed to print money is they first have to sell treasuries that we sell them, and then we're allowed to print money. Not that... So you buy treasuries, and then you could print more money because of you've sold stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you print more than what's actually, and then you fractionalize it, and then you loan more than you actually get, which is weird. So like if you have like $1,000 in the bank, you can loan out $100,000 because you have some in reserve. It's really fucked up. Yes, you create money through debt by loaning money. So you owe someone money, so then you can make more money. Whatever. So
I like certain types of pie. Why don't we ever just talk about pie?
Yeah, I know. So now China's getting rid of the debt that we owe them, which...
By selling off our treasuries?
By selling off our treasuries.
How do they own U.S. treasuries? I mean, isn't that...
They bought them.
Wait, they bought things that make U.S. money?
Yes. They bought a lot of it. How the
hell does that even happen? How can China legally print U.S. currency?
No, they buy the treasury bonds, so then we can print money. And we depended on them to continue to buy more money so we can continue to print more money and not be broke. So now they're obviously not buying more money, and they're selling the money that they did have, which deflates the currency. There's a lot of preppers that are kind of worried right now that, like, September is going to be something. There's some even going, like, super over the end, like, that's when the shit's going to hit the fan.
Of course September is going to be something. New episodes of Doctor Who come out.
They do, and I'll be a sober anniversary. Unless the apocalypse happens, then I might drink a pint.
Well, if that happens, that's understandable. Well, but you wouldn't drink a pint. You'd drink all the pints.
No,
that's
you know what? I think I will break my sober anniversary only if I see a meteor coming towards the Earth. Like, if it's like, oh, the world's going to blow up, I'm probably going to enjoy
I'm probably going to buy a six-pack of Guinness and drink it.
Yeah, you'll be drinking all the
on
Guinness.
On your roof.
I'll be smoking
I'm
all the
drink
weed.
On your roof, yes.
Because if the world is ending, I'm going out stoned off my ass.
Yes. So I don't know. There's some weird shit coming. I'm not going to say that this is going to be the end at
the
all
end
whatsoever.
Of the world as we know it.
But it's good to keep your eyes on things like this. This couldn't do it, but if other countries followed suit and they started selling off their treasuries, it could be disastrous. So right now, the other countries don't want to sink us because we're all so interconnected that if you take down America, you basically sink the whole world. Everybody's fucked. Until they find a new monetary system and they decouple themselves, and then they can supplant America, which is what China wants to do, but it's not happening. Keep your eyes open, preppers. This is scary. And keep prepping.
The Amish are not going to do anything different, and the Mormons have been ready for decades.
Yes, and we will probably talk about something that will not affect the Amish at all right now.
Yes. If the internet goes down, half the planet will come to a standstill. Preppers will be the last ones standing.
Yes, and this comes from theextinctionprotocol.wordpress.com. So we're just going to bash everyone today. So you're so cheap, you couldn't even buy the domain theextinctionprotocol.com?
Well, maybe somebody already owned it.
Maybe you should have came up with a different name then.
Maybe a shorter one.
Anyway. August 2015, London. These days, the world is a scary place to live in. If there's not an asteroid on its way to obliterate us or tear... I heard someone say that September there's going to be a meteorite or something to hit the Earth.
Oh, there's always going to be fucking something, alright?
Anyway. Or on its way to obliterate us, or a terrorist plotting our imminent downfall, there's the dangers of a giant online data hacks, or complete economic collapse. But when the end does not arrive, it's pesky, it keeps not arriving. There are a few people who aren't just able to cope with the apocalypse, they've actively been preparing for it. Like you guys. Like yous guys.
Like the people listening to this fine fucking show
yes.
about prepping.
These people call themselves preppers. Or survivalists.
Or the smart ones.
And they belong to a vast underground community. We have handshakes and everything. When the ATM stop running or the internet goes down, they'll be the ones to make it out alive. It's a huge community, especially in the States. But in the UK, the UK, it's becoming more and more recognized, explained Steve Hart, the man behind the UK's top prepping website, ukpreppersguide.co.uk.
.co.uk.
I've been to that website. Good job. Steve Hart.
Prepping itself.
Prepping itself is not just another form of insurance. People have a life, car, or pet insurance for their what-ifs. This is just a... looking at what if from a slightly different perspective. What if a serious earthquake hits? Or a tsunami? Or a volcano? Or a bioterrorism attack? Or zombies? Said Steve. And me. Whose website racks up around 100,000 hits a month.
See, we need those kind of numbers.
Yeah, Jack Sprinkle gets that on a day.
Yeah, we need those kind of numbers.
Yeah, I know. Admittedly, those situations are a little unlikely. Wait. Tsunamis are unlikely? Volcanoes? Earthquakes?
Have you lost your shit? Where are you even reading from?
They're like, admittedly, those situations are a little unlikely. Those things happen fairly likely. Anyway, that's... what a dumb...
But 59-year-old Steve...
sets up a straight... pretty quickly. Sets us straight pretty quickly. What if the government starts acting up? The number one fear among most preppers, economic collapse. Yes, we were just talking about that. The next thing you know, the whole world is plummeting down to a position that you can't get out of.
If anything to do with the internet goes down, half the planet will come to a fucking standstill, told
Steve told Mirror Online, citing the fact that the world that we work, bank, and socialize online in the 21st century. 99% of your life relies on technology. He recognizes that many of these apocalyptic scenarios won't come to pass, but calmly suggests it's better to be safe than sorry. Some of the hallmarks of prepping involve keeping stockpiles of food in your house, enough to last a week or so if the power goes out, and learning survival skills for how to cope in a natural in the natural world.
We will also talk about that.
That was a short fucking article.
Yeah, I'm just wondering something real quick. Are there any good comments? Sometimes there's only nine. There are two sides of the preppers for the apocalypse that is coming. I believe those that put their faith in Lord Jesus will come to save his people. We have been watching the prophecies come true, and it seems to be speeding up. Looks like September will decide everything. The rapture is imminent, will happen as promised in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, 15 through 18. We look up as our redemption draws near.
What's the next one say? The stories that you're looking at are about past events 12,000 years ago. The events coming will be totally different.
I was like, you didn't pull, like, the events coming will be totally different. JD says, please recheck the rapture, .. You should be preparing, .. God's people are being deceived, .. The rapture does not happen until the end of the Great Tribulation, just before Gog Magog Armageddon, .. I was pre-trib until God showed me the truth.
Dumb motherfucker, the fucking rapture happens before the tribulation, you dumb son of a bitch. Go back and read fucking Revelations again.
Mike knows what he's talking about.
Fuck yes, that's my favorite book of the Bible, yo!
It was a good one. We're not gonna read any more of these comments. Wait.
I can bitch about them if you want.
Yeah. Anyway.
Any fucking who.
I had a feeling there'd be some funny comments.
Oh my god.
From the extinction.
Completely got tribulation. Got fucking Revelations backwards.
Yeah.
I know we're not a religious show, but I know a thing or two about a thing or two. Couch Potato Mike does sometimes explain it all.
Yeah.
I think is going to be the name of my rant section.
Yeah.
My podcast has been kind of a story.
I was so disappointed. Okay, so I usually don't read the articles. Sorry. and until on the show, that way I could act with surprise. This article was short and not that well thought out.
No, it's not.
I think I may do an entire article on...
This article?
No, on the internet going down, like, the actual, like,
all that did
they
was...
didn't talk about, like, how critical, like, if the internet goes down, that completely fucks up global banking.
Oh, yeah.
You probably, you will not be able to go to your bank and get money out the day the internet goes down.
No, you fucking won't.
Yeah, you can't pay your bills online.
Mm-mm.
I can't make phone calls that day.
No, people are too goddamn reliant on fucking technology. Things need to,
Communications would drop. I mean, think about it. Who sends snail mail?
Some people.
When's the last time you got a personal letter?
The fucking postal service is in major fucking trouble. Nobody's going to send a fucking letter through the mail.
They started doing Sunday deliveries just to make up business.
Yeah.
Because FedEx and UPS won't do that shit.
No, fuck no.
But the post office will now.
I mean, it's the one part of the fucking federal government that's completely dependent on profit. I mean, the post office really could go under, and it's in danger of doing it because, well, shit, people don't write letters anymore. No. I mean, yeah, bills still go through the mail and shit like that, but the letter-writing community, it's all fucking Facebooking and instant messaging and texting.
Yeah. How many people would you not be able to contact without your father?
Oh, I wouldn't be able to contact him at all.
No.
I can't contact him now, but, I mean... I can contact it through Skype and shit, but, I mean, that's internet-dependent.
Yeah. Could you even perform your job without the internet?
Fuck no. I mean, the software we use at my company is on the internet. When the internet goes down, we can't look up fucking customer files.
Retail store orders are transmitted through data of the internet to place the orders automatically.
I mean, it's a private network, but if you take down the internet completely, shit's not going to happen.
I mean, if a fucking solar flare happens, it can wipe out electrical systems, the internet, all that shit, and fucking instant. You know, 150
years... That's a whole different level of fuckery there.
Yeah, but 150 years ago, if a solar flare happened, I don't think anybody would notice.
No. No.
Which means that, I mean, sometimes the old ways are the best ways. There's a reason... Yeah.
And we're gonna talk about some of that stuff. I don't think this article really delved into how not having internet will actually affect life.
No, it didn't. It basically, it said it all in the fucking title of the article.
Yep.
Might as well have just read the title and moved the fuck on, because the rest of it was just
fucking... I think our banter is way better.
Yeah, everything else on it was just fucking, like, coffeehouse bullshit.
It's like, oh, preppers are prepped, and they do this, and they're called survivalists, and...
No shit. If you listen to this fucking show, you already know what the fuck a prepper is.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm sorry that we read this to you. I'm not sorry about all the shit we've said afterwards.
Yeah. That you got a good rant, so you're fucking welcome. Consider joining the Cerebunk Army if you like these rants.
Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah.
Main topic?
Oh, yeah, our main topic. Bugging in versus bugging out.
Yes. This is... I don't know. You don't hang out on the survival forums and shit, so you're probably not well versed in the bugging out versus bugging in debates. They get pretty heated. People get pretty pissy over. There are people literally that are like, "I will bug in no matter what. You don't know me." And then there are people that are like, "If I see one tiny spark, I'm bugging out to the woods forever. I will eat dirt and leaves and snail poop." Like, literally, people are die hard, set one way or the other. Which is better, bugging out or bugging in? They were like, it's almost like you're divided. Bugging out is the Hatfields and bugging in is McCoys. And you'll kill each other.
One basically means the shit's hit the fan, let's get the fuck out of Dodge. The other means, one, the shit's hit the fan, let's fucking barricade Dodge.
Yes. Yes. Where I'm not rigid on it, as I don't think you should be either.
I personally believe it depends on the fucking situation.
You are correct. You are correct. If... For example, and we're gonna go into both, actually.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a gas leak, and your neighborhood is now toxic...
That's a bug out situation.
You should probably bug out. Bugging out, in this case, could be going to your aunt's house. It could be going to a hotel. It could be going camping. It could be heading to the woods to build a hut.
Basically, getting the fuck out of that area.
Those weaving Waddle and Dobbs style things, harder than it fucking looks in that video with the primitive guy.
Well, you've done it one time.
I've done it one time, and it was a bitch.
That motherfucker looks like that's probably the fucking thousandth fucking one of those he's made.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything becomes easy through repetition.
Yeah. Yeah, and then other times, like, say, you have floods and you can't get out of your driveway. Probably a good time to stay in, to bug in.
Right.
You should be prepared for, you know, the Nashville floods we had a couple years ago.
I was just thinking about those.
What was that? About 4 days to a week until it was like really... It was about, probably 3 days until you could get most places.
Well, that was a bug-out, bug-in situation depending on where the fuck you
were. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
If you were near the fucking water...
That's the ultimate example.
Yeah, if you were near the fucking water, you had to bug the fuck out. If you weren't around the water, guess what? You pretty much had to fucking bug in because a lot of the fucking highways, the roads, everything was fucking fucked. It was blocked. I mean, we were stuck out here.
Yeah, I
luckily, we didn't lose power or anything, and we still had plenty of fucking, you know, we had plenty of fucking food.
Yeah, I could get to my house, but there was a bunch of roads that were just fucked. My apartment at the time was so far up on a hill... There was no chance of flooding, and here there's no chance of flooding.
Oh, yeah, we were cut off from each other at that point.
Yeah, I couldn't get here.
Yeah, there was two fucking major rivers between us.
Yeah, there was no way I could get here. I ended up staying at a buddy in Nashville's house because, oddly enough, That was the week that I had to go work at another store for remodel, and getting to that store, which was in Nashville, that first day I was like an hour late, and I had to, oh my God, every other road in the Nations was flooded that day.
Oh God, the Nation. And, oh God, a bunch of people died over there, dude.
A bunch of people.
I mean, because there was that fucking, there's that fucking creek that goes right through the fucking Nations.
Yeah.
And it was fucking 15 feet up.
Yeah.
I mean, above the top were the fucking, above the top.
Yeah, there's houses under the water.
There were, oh yeah. I mean, they, and because of that, they never, they refused to let people rebuild. There's a fucking park there.
Yeah.
Now.
Which is, I mean.
And that was, you know, that's a good fucking example. I mean, not, we're not making all this, this entire fucking main topic about floods, mind you. But never let the insurance companies talk you out of flood insurance. That's what happened to all those motherfuckers over there. Like, something like fucking 2% of the people that fucking lost their houses in floods had flood insurance because fucking homeowners insurance, they talked the people out of it. Like, oh, it hadn't flooded in Nashville in over 100 years. Well, that just means it flooded there fucking once.
Well, no, no, Nashville.
I'm not throwing out real figures here, but I mean, there was insurance agencies talking people out of fucking flood insurance. Like this guy that my dad, me and my dad fucking know, he was one of the few people that had flood insurance. My dad fucking specifically told him not to let them talk him out of the flood insurance, and they tried to. They're like, you don't need flood insurance. He lived right at the mouth. I mean, he lived right beside the creek.
Yeah.
Lost his fucking house. He had the flood insurance, though.
Just
got that, plus got a FEMA money and rebuilt his house himself, saved himself thousands of dollars.
Yeah. I just had the idea. I'm going to record this on air so everyone can hear me and you can hear me, too, before I get back into the talking about the bug of it. So, you know how some weeks we don't have a survival gadget of the week?
Yeah, no survival thingy sometimes.
No survival thing, yeah. I was just looking at you, and now behind you, from where I'm looking, is my survival bookshelf. All those books have to do with survival on it.
Oh, yeah, they do.
I was like, from now on, if we don't have a survival thing, reach over there, grab a random book, and I'll talk about it.
Okay, that works.
Because I either recommend or disrecommend everything over there.
Well, yeah.
A couple of them could be entire show topics, to be honest.
Yeah, I was looking at it. I mean, like, The Well-Built House.
Yeah, that's an interesting two-part book I got from a kid.
No, look, the Prepper's Complete Book of Disaster Readiness.
Yeah.
It's all about bugging in and bugging out. But anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Next to Cody Lundeen's 98.6 Degrees book. Super good. Highly recommend it. Anyway. So yeah. Don't be fucking... Because I still hear people say that, you know, like, they'll talk about, well, I'm just going to bug in no matter what. Or I'm just going to bug out no matter what.
Even,
like, if you have like half a million people that go to a park to bug out, probably going to suck. Like, you know what you couldn't find during the Great Depression? Deer and squirrels?
No.
They're almost hunted to extinction.
Oh, my God. I did learn about this originally from the show Doctor Who. But, hell, during the Great Depression, there was, like, hundreds of people living in Central Park. They called it Hooverville.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it was a show plot line, but, I mean, damn, it was true. I looked it up after the fact.
Nashville had a giant homeless shack community.
Yeah, fucking Central Park. I mean, Centennial Park.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, shit. Homeless people got to go fucking somewhere in a Great Depression like that.
they actually lost their home due to the flood.
That's fucking
It flooded Hooverville there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Named after J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah.
Any fucking way.
Anyway, damn. For damn. Yeah. So we've sort of discussed, you know, the decision to bug out or bug in needs to solely depend on the situation.
Yeah, like what you were saying a minute ago. I mean, those people that say, oh, I'm bugging in no matter what, that in some instances is a death sentence.
Yes.
Same with bugging out.
It's the same mentality. People are like, if you're in Florida on the coast and they're like, Tornado! No, Sharknado! No, a hurricane is coming
Sharknado
straight at your
two.
House. Yeah, hurricane is coming straight at your house, guaranteed to destroy you. I'm staying. It's my home. No, you probably need to get the fuck out so you don't die.
Yeah,
you know,
there's reasons why they organize evacuations, motherfuckers.
Yeah, not always, but sometimes.
Some people are just too damn stupid to fucking move when they need to.
Yeah.
He's FFAD. FFAD.
Hi, Jordan. Anyway, like a lot of people in New Orleans, if they'd listened to the evacuation order, and another thing, if they would listen to the evacuation order, they could have got out and not died or been as severely fucked.
Still be alive.
Pay attention and get out early. If you think you need to evacuate, you need to evacuate early. Because, I mean, the order to evacuate will come later, so you can get out early and not have to be stuck in traffic for miles and days.
Days, yeah. Fucking literally days. I mean, a good prepper will fucking know. A good prepper will pay attention to the fucking weather and shit like that. They'll pay attention to the fucking news broadcast. And all that stuff,
yeah.
They'll see the signs coming. I mean, you know, guess what? Bugging out on a false alarm is better than not bugging out when the real fucking thing happens.
Yeah. I mean,
oops, I left town. Big whoop. I'm alive either way I go.
Yeah. I know a lot of us have, like, really hardcore work ethics. But I'd rather call out of work and not, you know, like, say you think your town's going to have riots.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather not be in Ferguson, you know, to be rioted and killed. There's an article I almost read where basically people were calling for, like, a new social media campaign to kill Whitey and then post pictures on social media.
Are you gotta be fucking
crazy? I am not, dude. It's fucking crazy.
We're heading toward a goddamn civil
it's
war.
A race war. We are. That something's happening.
Jesus fucking. One black gay man kills two people on fucking camera. You hear an outcry? Hell no.
It's all up over face. Yeah, anyway. So, the decision to bug out or bug in needs to be determined by which one gives you the higher percentage of survivability. If you determine that you have a 50% better chance to live by bugging out, then you bug out. If you decide by bugging in, you have a higher percentage chance of living, you bug in. That's literally, don't be tied to one. If I find out that NASA's tracking an asteroid that's definitely going to hit my house, I'm probably not going to be in it.
No.
Of course, I would probably try to move my house a couple inches if I could, but if your chances are better leaving, then you leave. If your chances are better staying, you stay. Literally, that's all there is to it. I have my bug out bag ready to go. I keep it in my car. We'll talk about that. So, let's break this down real quick to bugging in.
Mm-hmm.
Food. You have your food storage.
Yep.
I'm a big fan of not keeping all your food storage in the same place in your house.
No. What happens if, the roof caves in?
A tree falls and hits your pantry.
Yeah.
Fuck you. I mean, my house is pretty small. There's not a whole lot of room. But I still can kind of spread food out. There's some food up in the loft. There's some food above the thing. There's food there. There's more food hidden in nooks and crannies and shit like that. So, yeah, spread your food storage because it could be super localized. Like I said, a tree could fall through your roof and destroy your pantry, and you can't get to any of it. I even, you know, if you keep some food in your car or, Glenn Tate and have a storage unit, if you don't have that much room in your house, store some food at your friend's house, like, hey, which can sometimes be bad. You're like, I noticed you're eating all those ribs there that I left here. Oh, yeah, you want one? No, you jackass. They're mine. I read somewhere. Someone was like, should I be offended? Like, I left all these ribs, and then my family's having a cookout, and they invited me over, and they're eating my ribs. I would have gone the fuck off.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah. So, spread out your food. Water. A lot of people forget to store water.
Okay. Water is the oil of the human machine, folks.
Yes. I mean, general survival rule of thumb, 1 gallon per person per day. That'll give you your, God, some days I drink more than a gallon myself.
Yeah, me too.
And then that includes, you know, for washing and stuff. I'm kind of okay about using, like, what I call, like, second-class water to wash with. You know, so I have, like, drinking water, and then I have, like, you know, you fucking rain runoff from the house or something.
Oh, yeah, quit leaving my faucet on, by the way.
I tried to fix that thing. It's a piece of
you
shit.
You have to adjust it just so to get the water to stop coming out.
I'm going to find out why it does that and fix it.
I've never seen a fucking outside hydrant do that. I don't get it.
No, I don't either. He's got a frost-free hydrant, and you've got to turn it all the way down, then pull it back up to a certain spot where it'll stop. But if you go too far, it'll leak, and if you don't go far enough, it'll leak.
Yeah, it's gay.
I tightened it, and that didn't do it. So I think it needs to be something else needs to be done.
Ugh.
I think maybe, I don't know, anyway. I
have to dig the damn thing up and see what the hell's going on with it.
It's in the handle. It's in the fucking handle. I can, I'll show you.
Something slipped out of adjustment.
Yeah. Did it ever work?
Yeah, no, when I first installed it, it worked perfectly. I mean, you put it all the way down in the water. I mean, the fucking water running thing, that's only been over like the last 6 months.
Huh.
Jordan did it, didn't you, Jordan? Yeah, Jordan did it. Couch potato Jordan.
Well, anyway, so you got your water, you got that. I mean, you should be storing all these things. We talked about what you need for a blackout. So power, you're going to have power cooking sources, you know, coal or whatever. Am I boring you?
No, I'm just tired.
Just tired. Oh, we're running a little long. No, we started late. Go over your basics, what you need to bug in, have all the stuff taken care of. I'm trying to up some of my food storage just because I am kind of getting a little froggy. You can never go wrong with more food storage. So, you know.
Froggy?
Froggy, kind of itchy, like kind of getting worried. You know, I think now is a good time that if you decide to up your prepping, then you can't go wrong. Bugging out, we'll go straight to that. Have we had a good bug out episode in a while? I don't think we've had bug out mentality. Anyway.
No.
I'm a fan of always leaving my bug out bag in my car. Always.
Mm-hmm.
Some people will keep their bug out bag at home, and they'll either not have anything in their car, or they'll have a car kit, or they'll have a get home bag. A bag designed to get you home to your bug-out bag. I just sort of see that. I mean, I've got stuff at home, but I like to keep the bug-out bag in my car, so if I'm bugging out, I always have it.
Well, as any good prepper will tell you, you can never have enough prep.
No.
There's no such thing as too much prep. I mean, hell, have 17 fucking bug-out bags. Have them, have like fucking three in your house. Have one in your car. Have a get-home bag in your car. Have a fucking car bag in your car. Have them at your friends' houses. Fucking hide them in the goddamn woods.
Yeah. Oh, caches in the woods is something I thought about doing with you. My philosophy is keep it in the car. That way it's there. Before that, I used to keep it by the door. With the philosophy, if I had to bug out, I'd grab it. If I have to go out a window or something, though, it's kind of... It just won't work.
Interestingly enough, the show Big Bang Theory, which you don't watch,
yes,
boggles my mind why you don't like it. But hell, one of the main characters on the show, Sheldon, has a bug out bag.
Yeah,
with 3 days worth of food per person in the house.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally prepped, and they live in like
New York or something.
No, they live somewhere in California, not Los Angeles. One of the other things. But not only does he have the emergency bug out bag, he's got a backup for it. It's one of those weird little character traits they threw in about him. He's a prepper.
From Texas, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a prepper, sort of. But he's more of a nerd. He's the most un-Texan like Texan.
True.
There is.
Yeah. Oh my god.
He does know everything about football against his will, though.
Weird. So bug out bag. Bug out bags are kind of split too. Like there's weapons and ammo in the bag people, and then there's weapons and ammo on your person people.
Mm-hmm.
I've never included firearms in my bug out bag. One, I keep it in my car at all times, and I would definitely don't want my firearm to be stolen.
Right.
I always prefer to keep a firearm on me. Okay, so If I bug out for a gas leak or, you know, something like that, and I have to go to a hotel for a week.
You're not going to need your gun.
I'm not going to need my gun. If I'm bugging out because Mad Max style zombie biker raiders are coming, I'm probably going to carry my rifle. And in that case, I'll probably put some ammo in the bug out bag.
You know, interestingly enough, I have two everyday carries that I always keep on me besides my wallet and my keys. Uh-huh. I have a very good knife in my right-hand pocket, and I have a very sharp box cutter in my left-hand pocket. The reason I am right-handed, my left hand is retarded. I want my left hand to have the advantage, so it's got the sharper weapon.
The box cutter?
Yeah.
I'm actually a big fan, sort of off-topic here, guys. I'm sort of a big fan of carrying a box cutter, an exchangeable blade box cutter, and a pocket knife.
Yeah.
Because I want to reserve the pocket knife blade for important things. Like, I don't want to open boxes or cut packaging open with my knife. If I need to, I want the blade on that to be sharp for defense or emergencies. And use the box cutter for other things.
Yeah, see?
I've got a blue one of those. I actually have a really small Gerber EAB one that's, dude, it's tiny and light.
Actually, this one needs a new blade in it.
Yeah.
I just recently found it.
Oh. I found a company that has serrated box cutter blades.
Serrated?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it looks pretty badass.
Yeah, but see? Knife in the one pocket. Box cutter in the other.
Yep.
And they both fold up.
I like those foldable box cutters like that. They're good. We need to do another.
It's funny.
Have we done an EDC episode? Like way back in the 20s or something?
Back in the roaring 20s.
Back in the roaring. It's
been months and months ago.
Yeah.
But I mean, I am toward bladed weapons like you are toward projectile weapons, basically.
Yeah. I have lots of pointy things too, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you do. I've always loved knives, machetes, swords, all sorts of shit like that.
Oh my. Yeah.
We're way off topic.
Yeah. Fucking knives are on topic on the show always.
Hell, and we both have, straight razors.
Yeah, I've got three. I've got one. Oh, and I need to trim up my beard. I haven't shaved in a couple months. But I have like a $200 straight razor that's a real straight. You can shave with it. And then I had this disposable blade straight razor that was really neat. And I've got a cheap straight razor that's a piece of shit that I think I just wanted to give away. I don't want it. Anyway, that's bugging out versus bugging in. If bugging out gives you more chance for surviving, bug the fuck out. If bugging in gives you a better chance of not dying, bug the fuck in.
You know what? And we want to hear your opinions. We want the comment in the show notes. What your ideas of bugging out versus bugging in is. Are you more of a bug outer or more of a bug inner?
Yeah, which is weird. What gave me the idea for the show was, look, this is the way my winding mind works. So I get kind of geeked out on some of the bags people make for survival. And you have all these, like, weird acronyms, you know, like the bug out bag, mm-hmm. the Bob, and then you've got, like, the get home bag, the GHB. Well, there's an ultimate top end, like, high of the line, like, kit you make if you think that you will never ever return to civilization. It's called an inch bag. In case I'm never coming home bag.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, it's what you put the fucking kitchen sink in. It's like, I need to go out into the wilderness and recreate society, so I need a bag for that. We're talking like fucking 150, 200 pound bags. You could have like suspensions. So anyway, yeah. Looking at, like, and people, some people actually have made inch bags.
Mm.
And I get, like, It's like prepper porn. Come on now. If you like, look at inch bag things, you're like, they show you the bag, and they're always like Monster Ranch or Kifaru bags. Kifaru, if you want to send me a review bag, I would love you a long time. Oh, I love those bags. Anyway, it's just really neat to look at these things. And I was thinking about itch bags, and of course that made me think about bugging out, and then I was like, oh yeah, bug out, bug in, and then I was like, show topic. Yep. Is that? Oh, the survival thing of the week. Let's knock that out quick like a mother. So the name of it is...
It's
the Colby Premium Chit Orthopedic Memory Foam Pad Bed! I feel like we're in kindergarten or something.
Yeah.
So I was sent this bed for free. I expected like a tiny little pet bed. Maybe I'd let my cat sleep on it or something. We get it. The box is heavy. And the mat unfolds to be pretty big.
I mean, it's big enough for my pit bull to lay on comfortably.
Yes. But several of your small dogs tend to use it.
At the same time.
At the same time, yeah. It's lots of room for all of them. It's super comfy. The covers were removable, so you can wash it.
Yeah,
you wash it. So on the clean instructions, it says it could possibly. I think on ours it does. It says spot clean only, which is a lie. It was a misprint on the label that they had to fix later on.
Oh, really?
The cover is machine washable, which is good if you're potty training puppies or like Cash Potato Mike's dogs. They're just dumb fucking idiots and will just poop and pee inside the house. You let them outside, they pee on the porch and poop on the porch and then walk around and play.
I love those dogs, but I hate those dogs.
Literally, we have let them outside to go to the bathroom, and when we let them back in, they come right in and poop on the floor.
Yeah, they make me want to shoot them with something.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about buying a crossbow.
But we do love animals, and since we got this... So at first, they were a little freaked out about it, because it definitely looks comfy, and it's like human furniture, and they get yelled at for being on human furniture. So they're, like, kind of iffy about it. They kind of, like, you know, what
is
it?
It's so funny. We're watching them, like...
Jump over it.
Literally jump over the damn thing.
Yeah. And then it didn't take them too long, and they did. I saw them lounging on it and sitting on it enjoying it. And as I wrote my little review on it, as an added benefit, it's the perfect, like, Japanese-style sit-at-the-table, play board games. Like, you used it. What did you think about it?
It was comfy for sitting on the damn floor. We were playing a game of Jenga, and I wanted to be at a lower level at the coffee table.
Right, right.
And I was just sitting on it and kept my ass from hurting.
I still say I want to play. If I ever quit being poor and can spend $10 to buy a Jenga game, I'm going to take it out and shoot my 22. I'm like,
try to play
Mike, 20. I got Jenga at a 22. Come play.
That needs to be an event that we have, like the whenever we
survival
have
punk gathering.
The survival punk gathering, like 22 Jenga.
I wouldn't even be bothered by losing that. You hit it in the middle of the blocks, just explode.
Alright, damn it, we need a cleanup crew again.
Yeah.
Our Jenga sets down to 4 pieces.
I don't know. I think if we just get 2x4s and just cut 2x4s and make Jenga with 2x4s.
Yeah, that would be pretty fucking sweet.
Yeah. If you've ever played Jenga with a gun, drop me a line, jamesrowpunk.com. But yeah, the Colby Premium Chip Pet Bed, super awesome. Highly recommend it. Good for kids, good for adults, board gaming, good for everyone. And your pets still love it too. Totally.
Totally.
So let us wrap this up.
Just remember, if you want to join the Survival Punk Army, click on any of the links on the website. Take you straight there. You get the show in zip files. You get exclusive content. You get discounts to 11 or 12 vendors from around the internet. Just a great, and it's a great place to be. And if the apocalypse happens, we will come pick you up in giant black SUVs.
Yeah.
We can't guarantee that we'll own those SUVs, but it'll be the fucking apocalypse, so screw it.
I'm pretty sure it would be like just in Zombieland. We'll walk out and find a yellow Hummer full of automatic weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We'll throw you stuff. Yeah, and just in case you're wondering, you can join for $5 a month. That's fucking pocket change. And this is the most electrifying podcast on survival! I guarantee you'll laugh your ass off. It's worth $5.
Yeah, that's worth $5 right there. Oh, yeah, and if you want to advertise on our show, we've got a couple of sponsor spots that have opened up. So please drop us a line, jamesrowpunk.com. That way you can get your products sold on the most electrifying podcast in survival entertainment, Jabroni. And on that bombshell, it's time to end. So for the Survival Punk Podcast, this is Couch Potato Mike.
And this is James Burnett.
What the fuck?
What?
Why'd you say your name instead of, like, just James at Survival Punk?
I always say this is James Sicklin Burnett-ski.
You do not always say that.
You never listen to podcasts.
I've never heard you say that once, and I've been on every episode.
You don't listen.
What?
Like, last episode, we argued about something. When I went back and listened to the editing, I was right.
No, you
and
weren't.
Then at the end, you were like, you can call me like, ah, oh, if you're like me, and you, you know, like, if you're like, Couch, you're like Cheese Wheel Mike here, and you heard James say stuff wrong, like, drop me an email, yo. And I was right, and you were wrong. In your face, Cheese Wheel Mike.
For the Survival Punk Podcast, this is Couch Potato Mike saying, if you're doing a podcast with your best friend, make sure he's a fucking mute.
DIY to escape lethal gas trucks that blow up and poison your neighborhood.
You guys.